Welcome to the iCoder podcast with Ian McDuff.
Okay, welcome to this next iteration of the podcast on ODR for iCoder. I'm Ian McDuff, your host, and I am speaking with you from Wellington, New Zealand. My guest today, I'm delighted to speak with, is Chitu Nagarajan, who's based in Chennai in India, who's one of my good colleagues and friends in the ODR network, who really is one of our pioneers in the field. So good to talk with you again, Chitu. I have the advantage of seeing you, but people on the podcast won't. But it's great to see you again. By way of brief introduction, and for many who are listening to this, Chitu actually will need no introduction, but Chitu is a pioneer and a thought leader in the field of ODR for more than 20 years. I love the way in which you can be described as a serial ODR entrepreneur. I mean, it sounds like a risky business. You're currently the co-founder of ODR.com, and I'd love to hear more about that in due course. You're founder of something called CREK ODR. Again, maybe you can say something about that. You're past co-founder of Modria with Colin Rule, our good colleague. You're head of eBay and PayPal Community Courts, founder of ODR India, ODR World. And your expertise in the ODR field includes research, teaching, policy making, auditing, analysis, systems design, implementation. You're fellow of the National Center for Technology and Dispute Resolution based at UMass in Amherst, and a founding board member and immediate past president of iCoder itself, where we now meet very occasionally. Expert speaker at the UN Women's Access to Justice Initiative and consultant to USAID dispute resolution programs. How you have time for anything else, I can't imagine. but no doubt you do. Chitu, welcome to the podcast. It's great to talk to you again.
Thank you so much, Ian, for inviting me and having me here. And it's a real pleasure. First of all, as you said, seeing you and talking to you, and happy to be here.
Great. Chitu, we've got a number of things we can talk about, but let's try and focus a little bit, because the theme that's drawn all of our previous conversations together is the access to justice theme. And from what I've read in recent years, access to justice, given the backlogs in the Indian courts, is significant. And you may want to say something about how ODR can help that in India. But one of the things I take from the intro that I've just run through to you, you have been working on developing ODR systems and technology. Can you say something about what that means in terms of the work you're doing and what that means on the ground for people who want to be able to access ODR tools and technology?
Sure, Ian. So if you look at it in the field of ODR itself, we have two distinct divisions. One are service providers and one are systems providers, right? Mm-hmm. The service providers are all professionals. And, they can be neutrals, they can be people, mediators, arbitrators, whoever, right? Mm-hmm. And then you have these system providers or technology solution providers, where we have to actually develop these systems for the entire system of ODR to work. Over the past 2 years, especially after COVID, now you know that ODR is in the forefront. Everybody is talking about ODR. ODR needs no introduction. But most of the time, people just think that, hey, ODR is just like, having a Zoom call or, just meeting online. Sure. And then using email or, other modes of communication. But the original premise of even how online dispute resolution came into existence was, with a system. And when I say system, it's like a platform where you have different tools which can enable this dispute resolution end to end. So when you look at ODR system design, you need to actually think about, okay, what is the problem we're trying to solve? How can we actually design it in such a way where we will be able to implement it in the preface of a dispute so that you can prevent a dispute? And then even when, a dispute is happening or a post-phase, we can have a lot of automated stuff which can help us through all of these phases. And you know, the fourth party, when it came into existence, is like, how can technology actually help you? So when you're talking about technology, it is not just these tools, but how can you develop these technologies to help in these dispute systems designs? And you know, for resolution of disputes, or you know, to come into a space where you can manage these disputes. So technology itself, software has to be written. Software, as we know, it changes drastically. You have different languages which come in, you have different user experience designs. What we developed way back in 2000s, you know, it has to be drastically changed right now. So the entire mammoth of the systems design itself, we need to look at it as a product. We are developing end-to-end a platform. We have to have engineers working on it. We have to have you know, hosting providers like DevOps providers, quality control, product managers. So that is what we're trying to do here. We're actually developing a product company and a ODR product company. And so when I say that, yes, you know, serial entrepreneur in the field of online dispute resolution, the bulk of the work what we are doing is only this. And then how do we service this? Not just to the ODR, you know, service providers. So they are one of the parties, right? They are one of the consumers, the neutrals and all of that. But also there are a lot of consumers who will be actually actors on the platform. There are different stakeholders. It can be admins who are actually managing the disputes. In e-commerce companies, it'll be like, you know, buyers, sellers. There are lots of players who will all come into the platform and work on it. Also, the platforms we have developed so far are dispute agnostic, and I will say industry agnostic, because one type of a design cannot suit all disputes. For example, family will be different from, let's say, an insurance dispute, right? And then you might have an e-commerce dispute. Every industry, telecom industry, then you might have something to do with debt collection. All of these disputes are different. They all cannot be handled the same way. You'll have to think about the background of each of these disputes. Geographically also, you might have certain cultural nuances, certain policy nuances. How do all of that get into the design, to the platform? How do we configure it? Where can we automate? Where can we not automate? Of course, you know, a lot of people start now, AI is the word, right? So now, you know, we'll start thinking about, okay, which data can we start using to automate certain processes? So those are the things which I think, you know, we think about and we design platforms accordingly.
Okay. Can I just check sort of terminology here? I mean, I think your distinction at the outset was really very helpful between the service providers, the mediators who have adopted the technology or really during the pandemic felt themselves compelled to adopt the technology and have used platforms like Zoom or WhatsApp or whatever. They're the service providers, but you're talking about something much more sophisticated than that. And you refer to it as the platform. Are you thinking of a possible uniform platform, something that could be applicable across jurisdictions, across countries, something that I think, again, you developed a more sophisticated idea that it will have different tools for family, commercial, consumer, etc. What's your vision for the platform that you have in mind when you use that terminology?
So just you know, what we developed in Modria,
sure,
and Modria itself stands for Model Online Dispute Resolution Implementation Assistant. We have a common base, and then you can, you know, have modules for different types of when I say different types of disputes or different types of industry. So whenever we develop technology, we always develop a common technology, which will be the base. And then you can have all of these on top, which can suit, you know, these different types of industries or disputes. And the vision from then till what we have right now with ODR.com is the same. That has not changed. I think the only change which we had, and I think before that I should come to CREK, and CREK actually CREK stands for Colin Rule and Ethan Cash.
I remember that, yes.
And this was a time when, you know, Modria got acquired.
Mm-hmm.
And when Modria got acquired, Colin had to serve his term with the acquirer, and I came out earlier. And that was I started CREK ODR after that, mm-hmm. My period was over there. And at that time, I just wanted to, come up with a platform, an ODR technology platform, technology itself is very expensive. Mm-hmm. We've learned it from our Modria days or our PayPal days that to build something, it will take millions of dollars. So what do? Right? We're talking about access to justice. Mm-hmm. And we are saying that ODR is the pathway to access to justice. But the biggest barrier over there, or the obstacle, is that very own technology where we are saying is going to help you, because it's so expensive to build these platforms.
Yep.
Unless you use something like Zoom and email, and we don't want people to use just those, right? Mm-hmm. We are actually talking about core online dispute resolution. So at that time I said, no, we will develop something which is really cheap or affordable. Consumers, whether it's the neutrals or even small mom and pop e-commerce shops, can afford this technology. So they don't have to worry about building the technology, but all they have to do is they'll say, okay, fine. This is the ODR technology. It's when we think about video, we think about Zoom. When we think about email, we think about Gmail. So sure. When we think about ODR, we wanted them to think about, I'll just get a CREK room, or I'll just get a CREK instance,
mm-hmm.
and start doing it. So that's how, CREK was born. And I started developing CREK again as an affordable technology platform. And, and it could be anybody can use it, as I said. I wanted to name it, CREK, which is for Colin Rule and Ethan Cash, because, they are the founding fathers for online dispute resolution. I think for me, I exist because of them. There's a lot of contribution. So it was my way of paying tribute to both of them. And luckily, Colin could not say no, because he was still away from this. And I came up with CREK. But then Colin and I, we are coming up with, we've already launched ODR.com.
Yep.
And ODR.com will have CREK as, the platform where all of the backend runs on the CREK platform. And, how we are servicing it will be through ODR.com, right?
Okay, the portal that people will use in due course, a consumer in New Zealand has a dispute with a consumer, a provider in India, their portal will be ODR.com. CREK is not visible.
Yes.
Is that your idea?
Yes, yeah. Correct. CREK is the, the technology stack.
Sure.
Where all the ODR systems will run on.
Mm-hmm.
And, the face of it is ODR.com. But the way we provide our systems is we don't provide from C to C. A consumer cannot file, a consumer cannot resolve.
Right.
We only provide our services currently to organizations or individual service providers, right? We don't provide, the technology for consumers.
Gotcha.
To consumers. Yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah. So, and again, for ODR.com, it is geography agnostic, industry agnostic. So when we build these systems, we want it to be geography and industry agnostic, because we don't want to say, okay, this is just applicable to India, or this is just applicable to US, mm-hmm. or to New Zealand. It's not that way. We build platforms where, the technology can be used anywhere, Exactly, like the example, what you know, I said, like a Zoom or a Gmail or mm-hmm. whatever, right? We're not thinking about where it is, whatever, we just use it. So that is what we want to do. We want ODR.com to be like the operating system for online dispute resolution.
So you say this is not for C to C, but no. Suppose I am a mediator based here in New Zealand, and I have got a commercial client also here in New Zealand who has a dispute with another commercial person in Singapore. I would be able to use ODR.com and invite the parties to join me. So it becomes, as you say, it becomes a neutral platform.
Yes.
How do you deal? Well, I guess I suppose it's less of an issue with, say, mediation, but and you've made it very clear, and I think usefully, that this is geography and jurisdiction agnostic. Are there likely to be issues you have to deal with in terms of choice of law or choice of, for example, if it's a consumer dispute? And I had this conversation with Pablo Cortes about a month ago, where, he, as you know, Pablo works in the EU consumer space. And at the moment, they're only working within particular countries of the EU rather than cross-border, because there are too many issues. Once you engage in the cross-border disputes, then you've got jurisdictional questions. Is that something that you're addressing?
So for us, we just provide technology. So as long as our technology is compliant, right? Let's say ours have to be compliant with GDPR, if it's going to be used in Europe. So as long as that is there, that's fine. Choice of law is left up to people who are using the platform.
I understand. Okay, so it's in a way, without sounding too dismissive, it's not your problem. Okay, now that's actually a sensible way of dealing with it, because the platform provider, i.e. ODR.com, could not possibly resolve all the jurisdictional and choice of law questions in a complicated commercial world. So it's up to the mediator or possibly arbitrator to resolve any of those issues about jurisdiction, choice of law. Okay. Is ODR.com up and running, or is it still in development?
It's up and running.
Okay. So anybody listening to this could go to ODR.com, and I could probably do that on a split screen right now, except that I'm not going to. If I'm a user, a potential user of the technology, what's your idea, what's your vision of what it is I will be able to do? Can I, as a user, a service provider, mediator, say, go to that platform and use it as the basis for which I can engage in my conversation with parties across time zones, across countries? You say it's agnostic in terms of location. So that's the plan, is it?
Yes, we already have that. So CREC already has a mediation room.
Yeah.
And, mediators can come and subscribe to the mediation room, mm-hmm. and they can have 5 cases running all the time. So that's already there. And all of that is being ported to ODR.com. So mediators can easily get their mediation room. Mm-hmm. And invite parties,
Okay, is it primarily designed for mediation?
No, it's not primarily. The mediation rooms are designed for mediation.
Sure.
But, we do have requests from arbitrators and arbitration institutes. As I said, mediation room is just one-off, because we wanted mediators to have those mediation rooms and make it accessible for them, or technology which is accessible for them, where they can have case management tools and you can have your private caucuses, document storage, all of that stuff. The platform itself, what we do is, like, we have big clients, right, where we gotta really design dispute resolution systems or instances for their particular use cases, where you might have panel management, you have invoicing, you have billing, you have, you might have private caucuses, you might have joint caucuses, there are lots of things. So all of that is what the platform is geared to do.
Okay, I mean, this goes back to illustrate the point with which you began, which is that this is this idea of systems design is much more sophisticated than, for example, what happened during lockdown, during the pandemic, where of necessity, mediators and others found themselves saying, oh, goodness me, if I want to carry on working, then I've got to go online. How do I do that? WhatsApp, Zoom, whatever it might be. But as with the design of any legal system, so the design of any dispute resolution system has to have a number of components. So you're designing rooms, spaces, billing, breakout rooms, and so on. This is not a yes but question, but it's a question, you know, your work is really turns on access to justice. How are you dealing with the question of access to technology? Because a large part of the world may not have access to a sufficiently sophisticated level of technology to enable them to use this.
Yes, yes, Yen. And that's something very close to my heart. Now, if you look at access to technology, especially in third world countries or a different set of geography, first of all, we just have to go with mobile first.
Sure.
That is, I think the number one rule. And now, a lot of things are being developed with that, mobile first attitude. But also, if you look at the apps which are coming up, right, on all of these mobile phones, mm-hmm. which is just amazing. It's just amazing. So what I see is, I think all of us are becoming outdated and outdated because we are the older generation. We are never going to understand what the millennials or the Alpha Zs, they require, they need, the mm-hmm. way they communicate, the way they do things is completely different. Also, when you're talking about access to technology, the way we need to start thinking about these things is the problems itself might be different, right? I would love it if they can start thinking about how do we resolve these problems or these issues with the technology they have. That is a great way of starting innovation, as sure. well as, it's a good thing for us to understand the tools which they have, what they're comfortable with, and the issues as also, and then, come up with solutions. So let's say that, I want to really get into one of these, one of these problems, one of the rural areas in one of the third developing countries, then what do I do, right? I would actually go there. I need to understand what works for them. What are the mobile phones they're using? How can we enable it for them? Rather than come up with something which they cannot use and and making it a barrier. When you look at mobile phones, it is there, people do have it, but the way we design it for them, right, to make it easier in their languages, so if we do that, I think we can cross it. Sure. And also, the knowledge which they have right now is just amazing. Well, in India, for instance, we do have these digital payments everywhere. Mm-hmm. And people are able to send WhatsApp messages in every nook and corner of India. So it's just amazing the way they're able to send messages, the way they're able to communicate. Now, I don't have a problem communicating with, people in rural parts of India because of, this WhatsApp, which is there everywhere, and, this payment method, right, digital payments. Yep. So if they are able to do that, we should utilize those type of tools and come up with certain systems which can resolve issues. Also, the information which is being passed on, we do have now kiosks in most of these, rural sections where you know you can have information which can be sent out to people on their rights, mm-hmm. on what you can do and all of that stuff. So it is easier right now. I must say it is easier.
Sure.
But the technology which we think or you know we go about is like you know really the high tech. But then I think it's really good for us to think about the simple things of which is available and make that happen first, rather than you know going into you know a different type of a world and all of that. Because I think that is where the gap is. The practicality of application, we will lose it if we go there. But probably if we look at the ground level, where it is there, technology is there, what is it that they are using and how do we cater to that? That is where I think ODR can really play a great part, because the technologies we are building are really sophisticated. And probably, you know, again, when we look at the backlog and all of that, whether it's a courts, whether it's arbitration, all of that is extremely costly. Mm. And we don't want that bottleneck to be created again. So I think we just need to reinvent it a little bit more for access to justice.
Now, your comments, this is fascinating, Chitu, but your comments remind me of a couple of things. One is to ask you, have you seen the documentary Writing with Fire?
No, I have not.
It's a documentary by two Indian filmmakers, and it's the most wonderful, it's an award-winning documentary, and it's about a group of Dalit women in Uttar Pradesh who have become journalists against all the odds, women and Dalit, it was a very, very moving documentary, Writing with Fire, and I don't know how widely available. You can find bits of it on YouTube, of course. But all of their work is done on mobile phone. And they were funded somehow to each of them have mobile phones. Most of them had never even seen a mobile phone, of course. But it allowed them to go out into the community to conduct interviews, to upload that to the website. And I can't remember the name of the actual website, but you'll be able to find it, or I can upload it to accompany this podcast when it's sent out. That's the first thing, and it reinforces the point you make is that the grassroots work is being done by and large at a mobile phone level, and the other is, when you think of our colleague formerly in Sri Lanka, now based in New Zealand, Sanjana Hatatua. And during the civil war in Sri Lanka, the work that was done just to keep an eye on the community was done by people with very simple mobile phones and bicycles.
Yeah.
And they were just going around the neighborhood, just keeping an eye on any trouble stirring. So the comments with which you began, which I found fascinating, are really about the very sophisticated, potentially complex designed tools, but the interface of which you now speak is the one everyone carries in their pocket. It's the mobile phone. So really, most folks don't need to know about, you know, in the same way, most of us don't need to know how a legal system operates. In fact, it's probably better that we don't.
Yes.
Was it Bismarck who said there are two things no citizen should see being made? One is laws and the other is sausages. And, you know, it's best not to know. So, you know, the work you're doing says at the end of the day, if you've got a mobile phone, that is your key.
Yep.
And what work has been done across India, as far as you know, to ensure the maximum access to that kind of technology? Because mobile phones are not cheap. I mean, I just put in an order for a new mobile phone, and I'm going to have to sell one of the grandchildren to buy it. But the technology can be fairly straightforward. You can buy a $50 phone or a $2,000 one. What's happening in India by way of ensuring the spread of that technology, the mobile phone technology?
So we have great penetration right now, Ian. Mm-hmm. And, we are also having a lot of schemes like Jio's coming up with, you know, Wi-Fi everywhere. You know, these phones are actually available for cheaper and cheaper, right? You can get a smartphone anywhere between like 3,000 to 5,000 rupees. And you know, that smartphone will come with basic stuff, right?
Yep.
So, and WhatsApp is basic. So, I think that goes even without saying. Mm-hmm. So you do have all of that. And every house, it's fascinating. I think in India, you will have a TV in every home now, mm-hmm. because we can't live without our movies. And of course, you know, now you have mobile phones, because now most of your mobile phones are also serving as TVs, right? Because you have all of these OTT platforms and everybody's watching content. And yep. every part of India, we are watching content, right? So they will have that. You know, access to that is not becoming a problem. Network connectivity issues as well, they're trying to solve that.
Mm-hmm.
So penetration in every nook and corner is happening. And India is really, really, really concentrating on all of that. So, which is great, which is absolutely yeah. great. And, you know, even for, you know, online dispute resolution, we have a draft ODR policy, which is the first in the world for a nation. And, you know, they have like a lot of sections on the national ODR policy on, you know, what is it that we can do for India at different levels. And ODR is actually at the forefront now in India. Where you know, we're having like open networks for online dispute resolution.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of open networks, you know, for e-commerce. We have something for digital payments. These big initiatives are taking place, which is a delight, which is absolute delight. And I think people who come to the conference in March, the next ODR conference is yep. going to be held in March of 2023 on October 17th and 18th. You need to cut that in. So the next ODR conference will happen in March 2023, March 17th and 18th in Bangalore.
Yep.
And you would hear all of this there. On what we are doing, where we are with online dispute resolution, the nation itself in different parts of the world, the industry is coming together, the judiciary has come together. So a lot of initiatives in this field and how they are trying to make it accessible with these open networks. So that, you know, you can have more innovation, they're having more people who can come into the system. So a lot of great things happening in India during that time. And, you know, you can hear all of it at the conference.
Now, I'm assuming, given that the number of official languages in India, and I lose track of the number, I presume your platforms are, again, agnostic in terms of language. And there'll be... if someone approaches your odr.info.com rather in India, what will they see by way of a language on the front page? Is it going to be Hindi, Tamil? What will they see?
It will be English, but the platform itself is our official language is English.
Yeah.
So, you know, so it will be in English,
mm-hmm.
but the platform itself is built, as you said, with localization. So that, you know, and also we have the platform is catered for different types, you know, left to right, right to left, you know, the characters.
Sure.
So all of that is the platform is built for that. We do have, you know, a Spanish version running. We do have a Portuguese version running because, wow. you know, we do have customers who wanted that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's very simple for them to like, you know, input it into the platform. So the base is there. All the provisions are already there. But, you know, if they want, if our customers want it, then automatically, you know, we provide that. So it is, as you said, it is, you know, language agnostic and, you know, we have designed it for multilingual purposes.
Mm-hmm. You also mentioned a moment ago, too, that the Indian government has been very supportive on this and there are national policies being developed on ODR. If someone listening to this wants to go and look at that, what keywords would they search on to find those policy documents without, you don't need to give me the website, simply just what would we look for to find the policy documents?
The National Indian, the National ODR Policy for India.
Okay, and, yeah, that's clear enough.
And, yes, and I think we do have it on iCoder and ODR.info.
Ah, okay, yep. We can look for that. But yep, certainly just a Google search will on those terms that you mentioned will readily find that. So we're going to need to wrap up in a couple of minutes, although I could very happily keep going for ages in this conversation because this is fascinating. You've hinted the answer to my next question, but what has been the reception in the legal community, judicial and professional, to the developments that you're spearheading in India? How has it been received?
It's been really good, Ian. It's been really, really good. I think everybody is talking about it. Everybody wants to move ODR to the next level. And there is an organization called Agami. Agami is hosting the next conference in India in March 17th and 18th.
Yeah.
So Agami. And Agami would be a great website, A-G-A-A-M-I.
Agami, A-G-A-A-M-I.
They are the host for the conference.
Okay.
And they were instrumental in bringing everyone together, the judiciary, the government, the industry, and they've done an awesome job. There's also a handbook on ODR. I would recommend everybody to go and look at it, a business handbook. It's also on the Agami site. Mm-hmm. And I think we have it on iCoder as well. So, there's been great Agami has made it possible that interest, great reception, great support by the government, by the judiciary, by the industry to take ODR to the next level in India. And it's because of them that, you know, all of these are happening, right? And we can see that it'll go to the next level, and a lot more things will happen in India because of the support. And I think in every nation, I think if all of these forces, I think you need, you know, all of these forces to come together, we would see great progress.
Yeah. What's clear from this, I mean, I've had hints of this in earlier conversations as well, is provided there is good support from the center. And it could be, say, in Singapore, you've got the Chief Justice, who's a great supporter of developing these things, or, you know, key speakers, movers and shakers, and Agami sounds like the body. Who are Agami? Are they independent agency?
It's a nonprofit organization.
How interesting.
And so it's an independent agency who only work for, you know, access to justice and, you know, transformation of justice sector in India.
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. Okay. Well, that's something that I will certainly look up, and I hope people listening to this can look that. So there's Agami. That's agaami.org.com.
.in.
Okay. Yeah. I will certainly look that up. On that optimistic note, Chitu, and this has been fascinating because it just tells us in what ways India is actually a significant player and a leader in this game. And I had no idea about just how widespread the technology, and particularly the mobile technology, was. And that's encouraging and very exciting. So, I see. Thank you for that link. And I'll ask Colin to put that link on the website when he uploads this podcast. But this would be intriguing. Great to catch up with you again, and thank you for the optimistic element that you've added here. So it's been great to talk to you, and we do need to wrap up, but thank you for your time, Chitu, and I hope to, and I know I won't be able to make it to Bangalore, but I hope we can. I'll be able to join you online, at least via virtual technology in the conference in March, and encourage others to do so too. Encourage others to go there.
Sure. Thanks so much, Ian, for having me here. It's always a pleasure to be talking to you. And I think We'll have many more things to talk about. I think we could go on, right?
We could.
And it's always great when we meet each other at these conferences. Going to be missing you in March, but hopefully you can participate virtually. And hoping to see you again soon, Ian. Lots of stuff to catch up, but if not, then of course, with all of these meetings and all of that, we will be in touch.
Okay, that's wonderful. Thank you. And I will now end the recording. You take care.
This podcast has been brought to you by iCoder, the International Council for Online Dispute Resolution. To learn more about iCoder or to become a supporting member, please visit our website at icodr.org.